And so today we continue on our series of the Book of Joy, a book that highlights, a book that highlights a week's meeting among the Dalai Lama, Desmond Tutu, and their interviewer, writer, Douglas Abrams. And the two come together to decide what gift they will give to the world. And despite all of the hardships in their lives, just think about it. Desmond Tutu lived through apartheid in South Africa. And the Dalai Lama has been exiled from his home country for most of his life. And despite this, the two come together and decide to address joy. Douglas Abrams says, these two are, there's some pictures of them, the most joyous men on the planet, he says. Absolutely, infectiously joyous. You can tell that from the pictures. And I think it's interesting that this joy bubbles up in them, as I said, despite what they've gone through. I mean, that's an amazing thing. I think it teaches us that joy is not dependent on what happens to us. It's not dependent on what happens around us. We can navigate life's challenges and still connect to that place of pure peace, pure love, and pure joy. And those of you who have been with us for all the weeks of the series know that they come up with eight pillars of joy that they call the very foundations of joy. The first four, perspective, humility, humor, and acceptance, they call pillars of the mind. And the final four, gratitude, forgiveness, compassion, and generosity, they call pillars of the heart. Today we're going to address compassion, and next week we're going to finish our series with generosity. So I found a story this week about General William Booth. Anybody know who he was? He was the founder of the Salvation Army. And as the story goes, Queen Victoria asked him to come in for a meeting because she had heard of all his phenomenal work with the poor and in the slum areas. And as they were meeting, she said to him, well, tell me the secret of your success. And he said, Your Majesty, some men have passion about money. Other men have passion about things. Some people have passion about power, but I have passion about people. And that's what compassion is all about in my mind. It's about having passion about people. Both spiritual icons believe that compassion like this is instinctive, and we can all learn to develop it. And current brain research actually supports this. It says that we are basically hardwired to be caring of the other. The Dalai Lama says when we go against this fundamental law of our being, we're going to bring much consequences to ourselves. In fact, he says, he begins the chapter with this, too much self-centered thinking is the source of all suffering. A compassionate concern for others' well-being is the source of happiness. He says, too much me, I, mine, naturally brings fear, a sense of insecurity, and distrust and loneliness. In his words, this kind of person will never be happy. You see that those who have all the power, who only think of themselves, can never even sleep at night. And if they do sleep, they don't sleep well. In fact, some dictators move to a different place every night because they live in fear of losing control. We are social animals, and we need to be in loving community with one another. The Dalai Lama says all the world religions carry the same message. Last week, Carol Bullock, Betty Ponzer, a friend of mine, and I attended the annual Women's Interfaith Conference, and it was really amazing this year. It was a different format, and it was really good. Women of different generations from five different faiths participated in panel discussions, sharing what was most important to them about their respective faiths. And I took some notes, and I want to share just some words with you. This is what the women on the panel said was the most important about their faiths. And the faiths were Judaism, Christian Science, there was one New Thought group in there, Catholicism, Islam, and Baha'i. And from Judaism, what was important? Justice, equality, we are all the same in the eyes of God, and loving your neighbor. From Christian Science, love God and neighbor as yourself. Goodness will prevail and to bring peace to this world. From Catholicism, the living presence within us. Now, to be fair, she called it Jesus, we would call it the Christ, but that there is a living presence within each one of us. And to live in community and honesty and to know our oneness. From Islam, values of equality and justice, love, dedication, morality, honesty, that we are brothers and sisters in humanity. And as we have peace within, so we will spread out and have peace in the world. And finally, from the Baha'i Faith, respect and dignity for all, acts of love and kindness, nonviolent solutions, peace on earth, and a great sense of hope. So I ask you, what patterns do you notice here? Shout some out. What do you notice? Love, justice, equality, peace, absolutely. And the comments of these women absolutely support what the Dalai Lama says in the book, and I quote, "The purpose of all the different religious traditions that have developed over the last 3,000 years is to promote and strengthen the values of love and compassion. The Buddha said, what is the one thing which you possess? What is the one thing that which when you possess, sorry, you have all the other virtues, and it is compassion, according to the Buddha. Now, the word compassion comes from the Latin. Some of you who took Latin will know this. Literally meaning suffering with or suffering together. Well, doesn't that sound joyful? Aren't you glad you came this morning, right, to be uplifted? The Dalai Lama's interpreter, however, Jinpa, gives us kind of a current definition of compassion. He says, it is a sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another's suffering and when we feel motivated to see the suffering relieved. So it's not just feeling the pain, it's doing something about it. Compassion is really not the same as empathy. Empathy refers to our ability to take in the perspective of and feel the emotions of another. Compassion is a more empowered state where we want what's best for the person and take some action, as I said, to alleviate the suffering. The Dalai Lama has a great expression for this. He says, if we see someone being crushed under a rock, the goal is not to get under the rock and suffer with them, right? The goal is to help remove the rock. This is classic Uni Principle number 5, that we walk the talk, we absolutely live in the truth we know. And as one of my teachers, Reverend Kelly Isola, said at the Village a couple weeks ago when I was there, she said, sometimes we have to get off our affirmations and into action. I love that. Off our affirmations. That's true. Affirmations are fine, but sometimes we have to do something about it. So, acts of compassion can really be as small as smiling and saying a kind word to a frazzled sales assistant, an exhausted mail carrier, or an unhappy child. I invite you to think of a time when you've either acted compassionately to someone or someone has shown compassion to you, and think about how it made you feel. Researchers say that when we perform even a small act of compassion, or even when we just hold a loving thought about a person or a group of people, we can experience what has been called the helper's high, as endorphins are released in our brains. Some of you will be really happy to hear this. That same reward center lights up when we are doing something compassionate as when we are thinking about eating chocolate and far less calories, right? Okay, and if we have been the recipients of compassion, we're more likely to be compassionate. Compassion is contagious. So, I'm going to share a time this week when I encountered compassion. Our computer guru, or actually I was a vehicle of compassion, our computer guru, who also happens to be a friend, came to our house yesterday to work on our laptops. I have a new laptop, and Bob and I are switching them around and doing a lot of change on that. So, I really was hoping, he arrived right on the dot of 9 o'clock, and I was really hoping it would go really quickly so I could get back to work, okay? You know me. When he arrived, however, I could tell that he was really upset about something. He just was not himself. So I took a deep breath, and I resolved not to look at the clock. I felt like hanging a towel over it, but I didn't. And I simply asked him, are you okay? Just those three little words, are you okay? Now, he's not a talkative guy, but for about 20 minutes, he poured out a story about something that happened to him at work that was very hurtful, and I just listened without judgment. I didn't give advice. I just lovingly listened. A small act for sure, but one that lifted the spirits of another human being. And I know we can all think of times when we have been compassionate, or when we have received that compassion. This is one from the news. This is where a small act actually spread all over the world. Recently, women throughout New Zealand put on headscarves to show solidarity with Muslims a week after 50 people were killed in the two mosques in New Zealand. And that spread to Paris, it spread to England, it spread all over the world. The thing is, we are created in the image and likeness of God. The Arch says, and I love this phrase, he says we are God carriers. Isn't that beautiful? We are God carriers. We carry divine love out into the world. And to care for another human being, to act compassionately, is to be growing in godliness, and it brings us true joy. One of the clearest messages about compassion comes from the life and teachings of Jesus and the way he showed compassion to everyone. He embraced those whom early Hebrew society had deemed to be outcasts. We've talked about this before. Just here's a short list. Criminals, lepers, the poor, women, children, Gentiles, Samaritans, prostitutes, and tax collectors, just to name a few. He healed the sick, restored sight to the blind, and fed the hungry, regardless of who they were. And in Matthew 15:32, before feeding the 4,000, this is not the 5,000, this is a different episode. Before feeding the 4,000, he actually said, I feel compassion for the people because they have remained with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I don't want them to go away hungry, for they might faint on the way. And then what did he do? He fed the people, right? So it's feeling it and then doing something about it. In Luke 7, right after, Jesus heals the servant of a Roman centurion. He comes into the town of Nain and sees a widow's only son being carried to burial. The text reads, when the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, do not weep. Then blatantly disobeying Hebrew law, he touched the funeral bier and the young man's body and raised the son from the dead. And one of the most profound parables, I think, about compassion is found in Luke chapters 10, verses 25 to 37. We have looked at this before. I'm going to read today from the Message, which is the modern Bible, because I love the language for this particular one. Okay, I'm going to read if I can find my glasses. Let's see, maybe I can do it without them. All right, here we go. I'll hold it far away, right? Just then, a religious leader stood up with a question to test Jesus. Teacher, what do I need in order to get eternal life? Jesus answers, what's written in God's law? How do you interpret it? And the scholar, this is the part I love, the scholar says, it says that you should love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and muscle and intelligence. Isn't that beautiful? I love that. And that you love your neighbor as well as yourself. Good answer, Jesus says. Do it and you will live, meaning do it and you will have eternal life. Looking for a loophole, in some versions, this guy is a Pharisaic lawyer. Here he is a scholar. But at any rate, he's clearly trying to trip Jesus up here. And this version says, looking for a loophole, he asked, and just how would you define neighbor? And instead of answering it, Jesus launches into a parable. He says, there once was a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. On the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes, beat him up, and went off, leaving him half dead. A priest was on his way down that same road, but when he saw the man, he angled across to the other side. And then a Levite religious man showed up, and he also crossed the road. A Samaritan traveling down the road came next, and when he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. Another good definition of compassion. His heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. Then he lifted him onto his donkey, led him to an inn, and made him comfortable. In the morning he took out two, the old versions say, denarii, which are silver coins, roughly worth 2 days or more wages in the day. He took these coins out of his pocket and gave them to the innkeeper, saying to the innkeeper, take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill. I'll pay you on the way back. And then Jesus masterfully ends this by looking at the scholar and saying, who do you think? What do you think? Which of these three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers? And the man says, the one who treated him kindly. And Jesus says to him, go out and do the same. Beautiful story. And remember, it's all in response to one question. What was the question he asked Jesus? The second question? Who, what, say it with me. Who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor was the question he asked. So we have to remember also, in Jesus' time, there was bitter historical hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans, going back to the time of the Babylon exile. The Samaritans were descendants of peasants that had been left behind during the exile because they were considered unworthy to come along. And of course, left behind, they ended up intermarrying other non-Jewish people, further lowering their status in the eyes of Orthodox Jews. Considered to be less pure, Samaritans were social outcasts, shunned by mainstream Jews. In fact, Jewish people were not even allowed to speak, much less touch, a Samaritan. And in Jesus' story, the lowly Samaritan is the only one to show compassion. Uni co-founder Charles Fillmore says in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary that the Good Samaritan represents Christ in you, your hope of glory. I think this story really leads every single one of us to ask this morning, are there people or even whole groups of people in whom we fail to see the good, the sacred worth, the Christ? I believe Jesus is saying all of humankind is our neighbor, not just the people who live next door, not just our own family and friends. We are called to extend compassion to those we know and those we will never meet, to those we love and to those we have been conditioned to fear and distrust. And in this parable, maybe Jesus asks each one of us personally, who are the Samaritans in my consciousness? Because any time and in any way we see our fellow human beings as less than, separate from us, and undeserving of our compassion, we are failing to be God carriers. We are failing to be God's expression on this earth. And just like forgiveness, we begin this process by practicing self-compassion, compassion for ourselves. As the Dalai Lama and Archbishop point out, I love their language here, it's hard to love others as you love yourself if you don't love yourself, right? It is. We talked about that last week with forgiveness. And as Neff and Germer show in a book called The Mindful Self-Compassion Workbook, there is a yin and yang to self-compassion. The yin of being with ourselves in loving non-judgment, comforting, soothing, and validating ourselves, and the yang of getting over ourselves sometimes and getting out in the world, whatever that looks like. And the most important byproduct of self-compassion, I think, is I don't have to feel better than others to feel good about myself. If we could all get there, I think the world would be a better place. And in this consciousness, I get over my ego-driven tendency for competition and know that my true strength lies in compassion. Then the arch says, even the cynic will have to admit we are wired to be other-regarding. Both of these men have English as a second language. I love some of their words, other-regarding. When you say, I care only for me, in an extraordinary way, that me gets smaller and smaller, and joy becomes increasingly elusive. When we are too self-centered, too concerned about only ourselves and our immediate families, this self-obsession increases our suffering. When we move from me to we, our own problems seem less painful. And as we do this, we practice, as Rumi says, loving kindness and compassion, and we are the first to profit. The Dalai Lama reminds us, if you want to be happy, practice compassion. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. It's a win-win. And remembering that we are here on this earth to be, as Charles Fillmore says, all that we can imagine God to be, I invite all of us this morning, myself included, to set the intention this week to simply be more compassionate. Be more compassionate in thought and word. Wake up in the morning, set the intention, and say to yourself, today I'm going to be compassionate, and see how your day unfolds. It's a process. The Archbishop says we have to keep working on it. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's extremely important to our own spiritual growth, and I believe to really the goodness of the world. So, here's the thing. I'm taking that challenge. Are you willing to join me? I hope so. I hear some people saying yes. Another thing I'd love for you to do after service when you go down and have coffee and conversation, share some of your stories of compassion, things that have happened to you this week and maybe things that you've done to help extend compassion to others. And we're going to all work on this together. And so it is. So now we're going to just affirm our great truth about God. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Will you affirm that with me? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.